We're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 6. The demigods and demons declare a truce. And today we have text 20. Arayopi hi sandheya satikaryartha gaurave ahimushika vadeva Hyartasya padavingatai. Araya, enemies. Api, although. He, indeed. Sandheya, eligible for a truce. Sati, being so. Karya artha gaurave, in the matter of an important duty. Ahi, snake. Mushika, mouse. Vat, like. Deva, O demigods. He, indeed. Artasya, of interest. Padavim, position. Gatai, so being. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. So this is Lord Vishnu speaking to the demigods headed by Lord Brahma. O demigods, fulfilling one's own interests is so important that one may even have to make a truce with one's enemies. For the sake of one's self-interest, one has to act according to the logic of the snake and the mouse. Perfect. A snake and a mouse were once caught in a basket. Now, since the mouse is food for the snake, this was a good opportunity for the snake. However, since both of them were caught in the basket, even if the snake ate the mouse, the snake would not be able to get out. Therefore, the snake thought it wise to make a truce with the mouse and ask the mouse to make a hole in the basket so that both of them could get out. The snake's intention was that after the mouse made the hole, the snake would eat the mouse and escape from the basket through the hole. This is called the logic of the snake and the mouse. Hare Krishna. Arayopihi sandeya satikaryartha gaurave ahimushika vadeva hyartasya padavingata. O demigods, fulfilling one's own interests is so important that one may even have to make a truce with one's enemies. For the sake of one's self-interest, one has to act according to the logic of the snake and the mouse. Om Agnati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurudminitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Chaitanya Padambhoja Madhupebhyo Namo Namaha Katanchidashaya Desham Swapitad Ganda Bhagbhavet. Again and again, I offer my respectful obeisances to all the devotees of Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who drink the honey from the lotus of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet. Even a dog, by taking shelter of such bees, will also get a share of that honey. Yasya prasadadagyapi sadya sarvagyatam rajasya Sri Chaitanya devame bhagavan samprasidatu. May Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be fully merciful unto me. By His grace, a complete fool can get all knowledge in one moment. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Lord Vishnu here reminds the demigods of the importance of understanding one's goals, because we may have many different goals in our life. So many years ago somebody asked Srila Gopal Krishna Maharaj how to be peaceful. And when he was asked how to be peaceful, he quoted a place from the Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada says that if you have one goal, you can be peaceful. If you have one goal, you can be peaceful. So usually, when our intelligence is many-branched, meaning that we want several goals. So if you have several goals, then as long as they are aligned a little bit, then it's okay, we are peaceful. But then after some time, one goal leads to the left, and the other goal leads to the right, and I cannot be peaceful, because it goes in, if I go there, I'm further from there. If I go the other side, I'm farther from this side. So I'll be disturbed. So it's important not only to have goals, it's also important to have priorities, different priorities. What is number one priority? What is number two priority? What is number three priority? It's important to not just have a to-do list. It's important to understand what's on the top of the to-do list. What's the most important? Recently I heard about a very good evening and morning routine habit. In the evening, you write down or thank Krishna for your three wins for the day. So this way, you know, what were three victories that you can thank Krishna for on this day? What were three best things? And also maybe line up three main, not more than three, but three main victories for tomorrow. This way, if you line it up in the evening, then in the morning you are ready. Like Mahatma Prabhu, he gives in his japa workshops, he gives this as a technique for improving japa, that if this is the japa retreat, then in the evening you think how tomorrow you will work to improve your japa. Then in the night, so in the evening the brain takes it into account, okay, it seems he has an important task on japa, and then the brain machine will digest it a little bit, and then in the morning you will already also have the clear plan. So you will not wake up as a vegetable or whatever we are in the morning, but you will wake up with a clear program, sometimes a very good program. So three wins in the evening, three wins in the morning. So it involves prioritizing. It involves determining what is number one. Also, Srila Prabhupada once told, he said it on several occasions, but this was to Dhananjaya, who was the temple president in Vrindavan. He was also in Amsterdam. He was at TP for some time. I don't know where he is now. He was from London, as far as I remember. So he told Dhananjaya that first take care of health, then take care of your sadhana, then take care of your seva, and sometimes devotees add shastra and sadhusanga. So this way you have all the health, 5S. Health is swasta, sadhana, seva, shastra, sadhusanga. So you have even 6S if you count the last word as double S. So a certain priority. In the sixth canto, we hear that for the sake of following dharma, for the sake of saving your life, you can sacrifice your dharma. So Dharma Shastra says that if it's a question of life and death, you can deviate from dharma to save your life. That's in the story of Dadichi Muni, who was asked for his bones. Not some bones, but all the bones. So he said, look, don't you know the rule of the dharma, that life is more important? He was joking with the... He was making fun of the demigods. They were sent to him to collect his bones. Vishnu told Indra, go collect the bones of Dadichi Rishi so to become protected from one killing of the Brahmana, they had to ask for a life of another Brahmana. So he says, don't you know, life is more important even than following your Dharma. So you can deviate from your Dharma to save your life. He's quoting the Dharmic verse. It's in the sixth canto. And, of course, it is usually glorified when one sacrifices life for the Dharma, for following some higher religious duties and principles, as Dadhichi Rishi did for helping the demigods. Of course, sometimes it turns into some, how shall I put it, strange competition. My friend says he got some book of lives of Christians, and it seems that in the early centuries it was like a sport to die for Christianity. It was considered like the, you know, successful life, to die for Christ. Why would you have to die for Christ? Not always clear. It basically turned a beautiful philosophy into just a club with a name. Not to live. It seems that, you know, to die for something is not as difficult as to live for something. Right? To die for something, you just go and die, that's it. And you are put on the calendar, okay, this is the day of such and such martyr. Mucinik, how you say? Yeah. You are in martyrologue in the calendar, and they have a feast in your honor. Some horrible, horrible stories about how they were torturing them. and then this is it. But we see, we do have one martyr who was killed not once, 100 times. Which martyr we have? Prahlad Maharaj. Yes, but then Narisimha comes and protects him, and he asks him, be a king for me. Or Dhruva, yes? Dhruva is very disappointed that, oh, I have to rule for 32,000 years. Oh, Krishna. He says, no, you rule for me. You become a ruler. So Prahlad Maharaj, you rule all the demons. And he has to show how he can not only die for Krishna, he can live for Krishna. And he was not so eager to die either. So thanks to that, now we have Bali Maharaj, who is on the other side here. And he leads the demons. So it's interesting how Srila Prabhupada translates this Sandheya. Sandheya is eligible for a truce. So the Arayo, the enemies, we have the singular enemy Ari. So it's present in Krishna's name Murari. Murari, enemy of Mura demon. So Arayo, the enemies are Sandheya, eligible for a truce. So truce is Sandhi. Sandhi is like alliance, connection. And Sandheya can mean eligible, or Sandheya can mean that it's required, it's necessary here to make a truce with the demons. Why? Sati karyarta gaurave. If you have gaurava artha, karya artha, an important goal. If you have a more important goal, then these enemies can be made into allies. You can turn these enemies into allies and use them. In the previous verse we have some sattvic example that now it's their time, and now they have blessings of Shukracharya, so they are very powerful. And today's verse sounds very manipulative. Sounds like something between tamas and rajas. So be like a snake with a mouse. You will eat the mouse later. Oh, Hare Krishna. First of all, we don't eat mice, yes? And we are not snakes. We don't have to be snakes. So it sounds rather like a lower level argument. So it's, you can see that oftentimes Krishna uses the full gamut of arguments for sattvic, for super sattvic people, for sattvic, rajasic, for rajasic, for rajasic, tamasic, for tamasic, for every variety of motivation, so that you're always motivated and everybody is motivated, even though it does not necessarily have to be his personal conviction that that's how we should always act. So sometimes they accuse Krishna of being an opportunist and too pragmatic, being too pragmatic. Like the Mahabharata describes how Duryodhana is dying on the battlefield, and you know this is the time when you hope that Duryodhana will accept, oh, I was wrong, because everything is lost, and I'm lying with a broken thigh. Why did I do this? That's what we usually hope that the enemies will do, yeah? That they will agree, oh, sorry. And it's like the biggest satisfaction that the enemy will accept, oh, I was wrong. Sorry, brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers and sons and daughters. It very rarely happens, if ever. To accept one's fault, it's considered like a super sportsman behavior, you know, very high sportsmanship to accept one's defeat or even to win graciously in a noble way without putting down those who are defeated. Duryodhana was lying down on a battlefield and he was telling Krishna that, Krishna, I lived a good life. I enjoyed everything. And I gave all enjoyments to all my friends. And I was following Dharma. I was a king, so I did what a king has to do. It says, you know, Ahimushika, be like a snake in a mouth. So I was just following all the Artha Shastra, Dharma Shastra. And I was within my rights. But you, Krishna, you have... you have told Bhishma to strike me below the belt, on my thigh. So you broke Dharma. So you, not I, you introduced Kali Yuga. Even though he is actually Kali Yuga himself, Duryodhana. And he doesn't accept, he doesn't say, oh, sorry, I'm Kali Yuga, sorry, I have to... he accuses Krishna of being too pragmatic. So no, Krishna is not pragmatic. Krishna is... following, he's the source of Dharma, and he follows the supreme Dharma, not just Dharma, but pure Dharma, sattvic. But sometimes he will give the arguments, different arguments, for people with different motivations, because that's what people understand. And it will be easier for them to follow. So this argument here, snake and the mouse, sometimes also we hear a recording how Srila Prabhupada says that there is another way to also follow this, that the mouse digs a hole in the ground because it has four paws, four legs, so it can dig, yes? And the snake has more difficulty digging. So then the snake lets the mouse to dig the hole and then the snake goes and uses the hole. So he says, in the same way, sometimes you can use the results of other people's work. So it's a similar idea, similar theory. So it may not look very sattvic. But Krishna wants to also remind the demigods to be very clear about the different levels of their goals. And you can read... in the next verses and also in the beautiful summary in the beginning. Or Krishna tells the demigods that they should not be attracted by all the wonderful Many other attractive things. Many other attractive things would be generated by the churning. So 14 he listed yesterday, yes. But the Lord warned the demigods not to be captivated by such things. Nor should the demigods be angry if there were some disturbances. And one thing he wanted them to focus upon, which is nectar. Nectar means something super tasty, usually, we say, nectarian. But in Sanskrit, nectar is amrita, and amrita is not just tasty, it means no death. So they will not die if they get this amrita. And in the Gita, it's mentioned in the second chapter as the synonym to transcendence, as the goal of going beyond birth, going beyond birth and death. So ultimately, this is the goal we want to achieve. There may be many blessings in this world, but the demigods or the divine people with a divine nature, or if we want to be devotees, if we are attracted to the divine nature, we want to focus on the keep our eyes on the ultimate goal of transcendence, achieving transcendence, the nectar of immortality with Krishna, in a relationship with Krishna. And for that, they can tolerate some aggravations, they can make truce with the enemies, and then churn the ocean. That reminds me, immediately reminded me of one story that was, for 70 years they were doubting if it really happened. It's the Christmas truce of 1914. So this was the horrendous war. The front line was something like 800 kilometers long between Germany and France, and by that time more than a million people were killed, soldiers were already killed, more than a million, and I think at that time the population of the world was about 1 billion, below 2 billion, yes, now we have 7 plus, or almost 8, or what it is. At that time it was around 1 billion, so it was, it's like, today, by today's money, it's like, 10 million people killed in 1 year, yeah, if you translate into today's population. So it was a huge amount of people, huge loss, and the newspapers on both sides were painting the enemy as the devil with the horns, who killed the babies and string the priests from the churches on a rope, hang the priests. So on both sides, there were horrible descriptions, which I don't know how. It's beside the discussion. So that's why it was very doubted that when this that this story was true. But then they discovered hundreds and hundreds of letters confirming this Christmas truce of 1914. So all the and it was all along the front line, all these hundreds of kilometers. There were hundreds and hundreds of letters about it, and even some photos. So the generals were warning that the enemy may attack on Christmas. They may be so bad that on this holy day of Christmas, celebrating something divine, that they will attack. So they were waiting what will happen. It was already 7 or 8 in the evening. And here's one account. We even have names of these. And this is one guy called Rutger Bregman. He writes a book, very nice book, a lot of food for thought, called Humankind. And the full book, he takes many, many famous facts about cruelty of people and showing how it was quite, that people are not as bad as we think. They're not so bad. He quotes some generals saying that the most difficult thing is to force people to, Hare Krishna, force the soldiers to shoot into the enemies. It's very difficult. And some famous experiments, you may have heard about the famous experiment about with the students who were divided into prisoners and guards, and how they were super cruel to each other. That it follows Hannah Arendt's The Banality of Evil. Banality. Evil is very banal, very easy. So people just follow the order, follow the custom, and they create unimaginable torture for other people. So he shows that no, this experiment was rigged, and they pushed them to violence very strongly. Actually, of course, we have this tendency in the heart, but he's showing that when they really run the clean experiment, it was very boring. Nothing happened, and the guards and the prisoners were just playing cards with each other. That's all. Nothing happened. Absolutely. No cruelty, no aggression, no nothing. No murder. So his argument is that actually humans are better than we describe. Which makes Shastric sense, because to be born as human, Prabhupada says, you need at least a little bit of sattva-gun, goodness, and at least a little bit of God consciousness. You cannot be a human without some drop of God consciousness. So what do we activate, the bad or the good? Yeah, that's the point. So Prabhupada was always addressing the good. He always saw the good and trying to invoke the good, fan the spark. Yes. So here in his book he describes Albert Morin of the 2nd Queen's Regiment. Hare Krishna. He even have the regiment. He sees on the other side lanterns, torches, and Christmas trees on the German side. And then he hears Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht, and there's some carols, Christmas carols. Yes, and it was so beautiful, you know, they were just shooting at each other, and then the beautiful Christmas trees and beautiful carols singing. And carols, you know, it's like similar to kirtan, you know, like bhajans. Yes, you glorify God. That's all, the whole idea, glorify God, glorify service to God. So it touches something separate, something special. It's not an ordinary song, Christmas carols. It's a special type of song. Yes. And then the British soldiers on the other side, they sing their carols. The first Noel. The king was born, the king of Israel. And so they sing their carols. And then they start singing. And then they join together in some Latin carol. Two sides. They both knew, you know, some carol in Latin. And they started singing together. They started singing together. Yeah. Both sides. And then, you know, one said, "Hey, do you have some tobacco?" The other said, "Oh yeah, come. We'll give you some tobacco." And it's described like, actually, all along the front lines, hundreds of cases in the letters and memories, they got together, they shared what they had, somebody shared some food, somebody shared some drink, some whatever, you know, tobacco. And tobacco was always, you know, a big, in the war it was biggest scarcity, you know. And, some even started playing football. Yes, and first England won 3-0, then German in another place won 4-1, and you know, and the, hundreds of them wrote letters back home saying it was so incredible, just hours before we were trying to kill each other. And then we see these guys, and they're normal guys. They're just normal. They don't have horns, you know, they're just normal guys, and we could talk to them. And it was described as the Christmas miracle, the Christmas truce. It's also true that this is a little bit of a miracle. There is some magic of God consciousness. You know, it's not by accident that this happened not on an ordinary day, but on the godly day. And by kirtan, actually. You know, it started by kirtan, by chanting the names of God, by remembering God. It sort of brought them out of the lower modes into which they were put, brought them higher. They saw each other finally. Oh, they are also souls. They are also humans. They also worship God. And then, you know, for a day or some days, they were very friendly to each other. They saw humans in each other. So it is magic. One of translators was saying that, like in East on Easter, Velika Noc, people are different. He says people are festive. There is some special mood. He says why? Because they remember God a little bit, but they remember God. So we have the Prabhupada marathon. Also, this is the idea that Christmas comes, so it helps people to somehow be kind to each other. Even total atheists, they will give gifts to each other. They celebrate something. The communists in the USSR, they tried to move it from Christmas to the New Year to kick out God, to remove God. But still, it's the same. Everything is the same idea to remember this supreme higher power. And then after a few days again, they started shooting and they started killing each other. And so much so that this is remembered as the cruelest event. And so many people died, and for years and years, and basically oftentimes it says that the Second World War was just a continuation of the First World War, because the First didn't finish some things, and they just continued the same fight. So for decades, many historians were doubting, did it really happen? So then later they found, no, it happened. It happened. There are hundreds and hundreds of witnesses and letters confirming it. So this is the Christmas truce miracle. So because this chapter is called The Demigods and Demons Declare a Truce, this reminds me of this occasion. So here, on the other side, we can say, okay, why should you make a truce with the demons? Well, maybe if Vishnu tells us, that could be a good idea, if there is a higher purpose for it, and we see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Krishna comes, aha, Kamsa, boom. Of course, Krishna was a little disappointed. He just grabbed Kamsa by the hair, and Kamsa became half dead. Such a disappointment, He wanted to have some fight. Kamsa just almost immediately died. But Krishna killed many demons. Many demons he killed. But when he comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, some of the same demons also come. Like Kamsa, during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lila, comes as Chandkazi, yes. And what does he do? He says, I'm like your uncle. He is his uncle, yes, Kamsa. And he says, yes, let's chant Hare Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kills not the demons, but the demoniac mentality. So that's the best possible outcome. And what is his weapons? His weapons is his beauty, is his association, his associates, and of course, the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, please understand me, I don't know if we should declare a truce with demons. I'm not calling for that, but I'm saying at least we should make truce, we should make friends with devotees. At least between devotees, if we can fight a little less, then there is a little more hope for this humanity and for this world. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
I have a question related to yesterday's class. So you said that we should try to suppress anger, for example.
And not repress, yes.
And not repress. So I was thinking, how do we suppress anger towards devotees? Because we know, okay, I shouldn't express it, then I will just make offenses and it's not good. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't repress it. So how to suppress it?
Okay, anger toward devotees. Somebody made a study that professions where they have to suppress anger have more heart attacks, like the air, this air hostesses and some hospitality industry, they have more heart attacks because, oh, I can't punch him in the nose. Although they did recently in some airline, they tied with a scotch tape the guy to the chair. He was fighting in the airplane, so they just had scotch tape and they just completely tied into the chair, and they were completely within their rights to do this. So suppressing anger sounds like a dangerous thing. Better than suppressing anger is going to the root of the anger and surrendering to Krishna, and then finding the source of this anger. You know, like if you have a leaky pipe leaking water, and there is water flowing. So you can try to cover this, redirect this water to go flow somewhere else. But ideally, you go turn it off, and then change the pipe or put the proper pipe. So ideally, we surrender to Krishna in the sense that we see, is it Krishna's plan? How is it Krishna's plan? Try to understand the other person. That's probably the main utility of all these psychology personality types. I remember when I was in the BBT temple, the Myers-Briggs 16 types was very popular. Socionics, they were using some Lithuanian branch. And I would always quarrel with my editor. I was the coordinator, I was in charge of the line, translation line, and my editor would always, we would quarrel about every word, half the words we would quarrel about. How to? He said, no, we should not use this word, this is not a good word, use another word. And I would show him the dictionary, look, every classic author uses this word, this is a good word. In the BBT it's a frequent thing, we quarrel about one letter, we can make a war over one letter. Now we are good friends with him. We are very good friends with him. So I would not understand, why is he fighting? And then I tried to figure out his type, and then I see, oh, that's his nature, that he looks at the small details and he tries to improve the detail. Not that he is attacking me or the book. That's his nature, and his nature is well engaged in this service. And immediately it dispelled my anger at him. Anger in the active phase and frustration and depression in the passive phase. You know, it's two sides of the same thing. So if you can see the bigger picture, maybe make it less personal. Like there is one Thomas Merton who wrote an advertisement for Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, famous Franciscan monk, who was also a lover of Buddhism, and some Thomas Merton. So some of his advertisement in one early Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gitas. So he said imagine that you are rowing a boat in a river, and then another boat strikes you from behind, and you are angry. So you don't look where they are going. Who do they think they are? Why do they strike my boat? And you turn around and you see, oh, it's an empty boat. There's no person. It was simply carried by the current and it struck my boat. And you say, oh, it's empty. Ah, okay. And then you're not angry because they did not attack you. They did not attack you. So in the same way, you know, if you see what are the currents, the gunas, you see what these 16 types or 9 types or 4 types. There are so many ways to speak about personality. It's all very imprecise. We are many more than you know, then 4, then 3, then 9, then 16. It's much more complicated than that. But it helps us to see, oh, these are the modes of nature acting. It's just his programming, his conditioning. This is his conditioning attacking my conditioning. Yes, or, you know, his generals attacking my generals. But we actually are, you know, the soul. So then it may help to be less angry, because are you angry at the river? Usually river is river. You see, it's flowing. So why be angry at the river? It's just a force of nature. It's not the river doesn't try to attack you. The river doesn't try to insult you. It's just flowing. It's another way to see how it's just, you know, the force of nature. So rather than suppressing, we can try to go to the source and redirect somehow this energy in such a way that we don't have to be angry. If you're still angry, it's also sometimes good to make it clear, inform the other person in, they call it non-violent communication. I think Bir Krishna Maharaj made a book, Empathic Communication, right? And somebody else also, I think, calls this compassionate communication. You have Govindananda in Zagreb having a whole school on this. So it's how to tell the other person without attacking. Yes, like you describe, when there is a dirty gamcha on the floor, I feel very upset. So I need that dirty clothes be put away or something. So you bring clarity, because sometimes to the other person it's not even clear. Like once in India, we were living in the same apartment with one other good teacher, very nice devotee, but he is from India, and he came. I have insomnia, trouble sleeping, and around 10 or 10:30 in the evening, he came, and he went to the kitchen, and he started doing something, cooking or something, or heating something up, and he was so noisy. Boom, dong, ding, dong, and I was trying to sleep, and you know, I had my earplugs and everything, but it's impossible to, you know, even it's so much noise. So then I got up and I went and I said that obviously I was disturbed, upset, and angry. So, but you know, I was speaking about this nonviolent communication, so I tried to come and say that when there is noise at 10:30, I have trouble sleeping. I have trouble sleeping anyway, even if there is no noise. But if there is noise, and I told him, and he said, "Oh, thank you. Sorry, I didn't think, because they have such strong nervous system that for them it's nothing. Some of them, you know, he grew up in a big family, so you want to sleep, you sleep. You know, what's the problem?" So he didn't even know that it's a problem for me. So when I told him, he said, "Thank you for telling me. I couldn't even imagine that this could be a problem, you know, because you're there, you have your room, you sleep there. What's the problem? I'm here in the kitchen, you know, I'm not going to your room, I'm in the kitchen. And I didn't know that, you know, my dropping a spoon or putting, how could I couldn't imagine. So thank you. Oh, now I know. Oh, thank you very much. I'll sure, in the future." So that's called nonviolent communication. So I could have, you know, keep suppressing my anger until 2 o'clock in the morning, you know. Or I could, but he was grateful. He said, "Oh, thank you for telling me." And also it removed the anger, because I was thinking, he's so insensitive. He thinks he shouldn't care about me, like I'm a piece of wood. He treats me as an object, not as a human. But no, he didn't know that this could be a problem. So therefore, it removed my anger too. Because I saw, oh, he didn't do this on purpose. He didn't do this out of insensitivity. He just didn't have this experience or concept. Like, because for him, it's no problem. You can turn on the light, drop things in front of his bed, he just turns around and sleeps. What's the problem? He can only envy such people. So that's another way in form. Anyway, I can speak a lot about this. This is obviously a big topic. So, you have some comment on this?
Thank you, Prabhu, for sharing so many very important points along our spiritual journey. I was thinking, as you were describing about the Christmas truths, about how the innate humanity is there in all of us and how we are fighting, you know, Hindu versus Muslim, Christian versus Muslim, then, you know, Pakistanis versus India, Sri Lanka versus India, blacks versus white, and this, gender, and so many. And how Prabhupada, out of his deep compassion, came to give us the ultimate solution. Because once you understand the point of Krishna consciousness, everyone, there is no question of quarreling anymore, because we understand this is not our home anyway. And everything is temporary. I'm fighting over my land or my but it's going to go. So Prabhupada's compassion, you know, was such a profound realization for me as you were speaking, that he has really come to save us. Yeah. And take us back to that place where there's no quarreling and fighting. And there's love and joy and peace forever. So that was one realization I had while you were describing that. Another thing I was thinking about as this young bhakt... Who was that? Jagannath Sutta? Who asked this question about anger?
Mukunda Madhav.
Mukunda, okay. Yeah, I was thinking to myself, you know, when I was a very young person, you know, this is many years ago, I was a very angry person. Very angry person. I came from a home where there was a lot of anger and, you know, hostile argument. I mean, that's just how I grew up. And it's only after I came to Krishna consciousness and started chanting that really that anger slowly started. So one more tool, or rather I would say for me, the most important tool was chanting Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. And again, we are not pacifists, meaning that you can see they fight before, they fight after. There can be war that Vishnu, I mean, Gita, the whole Gita is about fighting. But here in this verse, Krishna says, you think about what's your ultimate person. Do not fight for the sake of fighting. You see, why are you fighting? What's the purpose? Don't fight just because. Fight for. Don't fight because, fight for something. So here you need nectar. So you have to produce nectar. So for that you need to make peace.
You know, even during the Kurukshetra war, the Pandavas and the Kauravas, after sunset, you know, they were just friendly exchanges were happening. They were not quarreling and fighting at that point.
Right.
It was, okay, the sunset has happened, we cease, you know, firing at each other, fighting with each other, and there was friendly exchanges. So that's something to really marvel at, because... Yeah.
Shila
in
Prabhupada.
Time of war, to be friendly is something to me is... I cannot even understand it or imagine it.
Yes, yes. Urugayaru, you have some comment?
You were speaking about this experiment, and I was thinking I have this hobby gathering some information about Holocaust and recently the pictures came out of Mengele and all the crew after doing all the horrendous things during the day and during the week. They were behaving as a completely normal, yeah, happy, emotionally healthy people amongst their others. They went for picnics. There were footages, and they didn't show any signs of remorse of what was happening. And there were amazing pictures, and then, of course, experts analyzing and saying this and that. And on the other hand, there were groups of Germans who were put in a very difficult situation, and they have to kill, and they felt great pain doing it, but still didn't stop because of feeling of obligation towards Germany. So there are two scenarios. One is doing something for the higher goal and feeling okay. I'm doing this for a higher goal. These are maybe animals. I don't know. I'm just offering an explanation how they explain to themselves. They are like animal experiments. We are doing this for Germany, for families.
So they have dehumanized. They have to dehumanize.
Yeah, and there is the other scenario, but they are both working for Germany, for higher goal, for better society, for some remotely sattvic goal, and they sacrifice themselves and sacrifice others, no? But some feel bad, some feel good about it, no? So if you can, what is the trigger? Why some go there and some go there? And
well, this Rutger Bregman, he goes back to those famous experiments, the prison experiment. It was Stanford, I think, Stanford. Then Milgram electric shock experiment, when people were administering like 450 volts shock, and the other person was pleading, asking, don't do this, and then would stop talking, and they would still shock, showing extreme cruelty. And I think like 60 or 70% were continuing doing this. So he went back to that, and he found that, first of all, it's still remarkable that such a big percentage refuse to do this.